Welcome back to the Tapes Archive Podcast, where we release interviews that have never been heard before. In this episode, we have metal guitar legend Daryl Abbott, also known as Dimebag Daryl. At the time of the interview in 1992, Dimebag was 25 years old and was out on tour in support of Pantera's album, Vulgar Display of Power. In the interview, Dimebag talks about his guitar trick that he wants everyone to learn, how Randy Rhoads, Eddie Van Halen, and Ace Frehley were his influences, how great his dad was, and how Pantera writes their music. This week's episode also introduces a new interviewer to the Tapes Archive. The interview you are about to hear was conducted by Pete Prown. Pete is a veteran music journalist and has interviewed the world's top guitarist for over 35 years. He's currently music editor at Vintage Guitar Magazine and editor of the Legends of Rock Guitar Facebook page. His work has appeared in Guitar Shop, Guitar for the Practicing Musician, and Guitar Player Magazine, among other titles. One last thing before we get to the interview. The Tapes Archive Podcast is a proud member of Osiris Media, a global community connecting passionate fans with podcasts and experiences about artists and topics you love. Thanks for tuning in, and now it's time to open the vault.
I read somewhere about you being banned from every guitar.
It's like this, man. It started off about the age of 14, half 15, around there. They had this Q102, it was a radio station back then. That was the only happening rock station around there. They had hottest guitar player in Texas type thing. You know, they had the big commercial with Q102, hottest guitar. But what the deal was, it said, record 2 minutes of your hottest playing, take them to this music store in Dallas, and they're going to listen to it. I mean, it was for all of Texas and stuff. And they listened to it, and they picked like the top, I believe, 15. Then there would be the big playoff, the big showdown at a popular club in Dallas, which was the Agora Ballroom. Anyway, so get up there, and you play for something like 5 minutes a piece. Get up there and wail and shit, and then they pick like the top three dudes. First time I got up there and I wailed and I did what I could. I got picked for the top 15, went to the club, had to get my parents to get me in the club and shit because I was underage. I was the youngest dude out of everybody. I didn't think I did that well. I got picked for the top 15 and we got out there and then I got picked for the top three. I hammered as hard as I could. Dude, I won first place and I just could not fucking believe it. It was a Dean guitar. Like I play and I just died because I always wanted one of those and I won that. Next time they had another one, I entered. Of course, I got in, fucking won first place again, Charvel, entered again, won first place, got an ESP guitar, entered again. Next time, this is like 2 months per pop or three per pop.
What are you doing that people like? Just shredding?
I did a couple of licks that I'd made up on my own. I'm like one of them dudes got like decent at playing lead guitar like within like 3 months or something like that. I could just like burn pretty quick. I had good chops and I could play lead and actually had a half-assed idea about what it was. I think that showed through and of course I listened to records and I sit down and I'd pick out leads and stuff. I would do like a little bit of a Edward Van Halen solo, maybe a little Eruption, Randy Rhoads or something like Mother Earth or something like that. And I guess at the time those were the real respected guitar players and I did it well, man.
So eventually did they say you can't enter anymore?
That's what happened. I went to turn in a tape again and they said, look, man, just be a judge, dude. You already won everything you can win. Give somebody else a shot at it or something.
Does being from Texas affect your playing? Or is there some kind of
I believe so, man. I think there's a lot of great guitar players from Texas, such as like Bugs Henderson, Jimmy Wallace, Ricky Lynn, Rocky Athus, which are fucking big and influences on me when I was growing up and stuff. And I would like go to a club and watch those dudes and I'd go home and I would just sit there and I'd play.
Are they from Austin? Or?
Mainly, all those dudes are from Dallas, man. Wasn't like any one of them sat me down and taught me anything or nothing. I was lucky enough that my dad worked at Pantego Sound at the time, which is the studio that he eventually owned and where we cut all of our records at. And he was doing a record on Bugs Henderson. He's a true blues player.
For a metal guy, you're singing a lot more. You're spending those notes and screaming them. A lot of guys are just like into the shredding thing.
Man, I'm into fucking feel and I'm into note value. I'm into melody, man. I can still shred. There's no problem doing that shit. I mean, that's like for shredding, I think, began with people that weren't, I don't want to diss anybody out, but maybe people that weren't talented enough or fucking happening enough to play like lead or to really feel something where they just took out their aggressions on the guitar and they fucking hammered. I got aggressions just like everybody else, but I have the other side to me too.
Well, who are you listening to when you were younger?
Big time. time, early Eddie Van Halen 1 and Eddie Van Halen 2. Eddie Van Halen 1 and 2. Van Halen 1 and 2. But to me, you know, it's Edward. I'm like a listener to the music more than I am like a vocalist type, dude. Although I love vocalists that can well from the heart and do, like, I look at lead vocalists like I look at guitar players, like a Rob Halford or something. Wells a fucking melody out and just ridiculous pitch or a really gutty throat value. I think of that as like chunk and distortion on a guitar or like a squeal or something.
You're into Randy Rhoads too.
Randy Rhoads and fucking Ace Frehley was a really huge influence on me.
Where did you get that wicked picking from? I mean, you have really clean picking. I mean, it could be a jazz or a country influence. It could be Uli Roth. I mean,
that's, which kind of picking on the rhythms, right?
No, lead. When you're playing lead, like especially the song Rise, there's a little. I mean, that's real clean picking. Where does that come from?
I don't know if you listen close enough or not, because I do a lot more of the legato, like Edward stuff. I'm like, when people come out with a video camera, they film like close up of my right hand, and I'm sitting there going, doing like a double, triple, a single, and a fucking rake and stuff, and my left hand's doing all the work, mainly, but there is some definite chunking in there.
Just that one song in Rise, that's right.
I actually thought I played that a little bit sloppy, but it had the character, so I said, leave it alone.
So there wasn't like anybody listened to for picking, it was more like the hailing guy.
Man, I was talking to this dude the other night, I think I said it the best for the first time. He was trying to pick my brain on what influenced me to be like I am and why I do this and why I do that. Yeah. And I just told him, he said, who's your main dude? He goes, I'm into Yngwie right now. And he goes, I know every solo and every this and every that. And I go, man, honestly, even since I was fucking 14 years old until now I'm 25, I've never learned more than like two or like three solos of any person's lead guitar playing. I never like really got all stoned and did a bunch of crank and sit there and all skitzed out and listened to every lead and learned every lick and try to figure out what scale and
trying to get the spirit of the player.
Just the vibe, like a Van Halen record. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Dude, I still listen to that shit today before I go on and play. The spontaneity and the liveness of that dude's guitar playing was just unfucking real.
How do you, like, balance your guitar playing, which is so clean and polished, with sort of the grunge of Pantera music? I mean, do you ever think, how do I balance it out? Or
I never, ever analyze anything I do at all. I write the best songs we can possible, and,
You know your scales and shit? So
listen, I know a major scale and a minor scale and a pentatonic blues scale, and that's like as far as deep as I ever got. 2 days ago, I bought a scale book, and I was like going over learning like all these five positions of like F major or something scale, something to feel like I was doing, feel like I was like digging in a little bit. Cause dude, I'm not a heavy theory dude at all. I'm not
Did
a heavy.
Take lessons or anything?
I took like one or two from one dude, and then one from one dude, and the only dude that really, I think, taught me anything was my dad. He's like a real well-rounded musician. He plays acoustic guitar real fluently, and he plays electric guitar. I mean, he plays anything from rock to country, and he's always cutting his own tunes. So he plays everything on his tunes. He plays like I come in and he's doing a keyboard part, and I go, what the fuck is he doing, you know? I mean, dude, he just blows me away. He never ever tried to cram me on one style or anything. I showed him that I learned Smoke on the Water, like on the E string, done. Dun, 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 dun. And dude, he goes, well, dude, check this out. He goes, this is what you call a bar chord. Then I went, yeah, and I died. I went, Jesus Christ.
I've got the greatest dad on the planet.
I thought it was like fucking 20 million times what it was on the one string. And then I go, I can dig this. And then I really got into like the playing aspects and stuff. I would go over to my dad's house on a Sunday night before I'd back to school on Monday. I would take a record like Cocaine by Eric Clapton or a Van Halen, which he had some problems with. He's going, God damn, that dude uses a lot of reverb, son. With that kind of guitar sound, you can almost play anything and it sounds like God. And that's where I got noticing tones and stuff like that and got into it. He showed me probably like 10 songs, like 10 different Sundays, and showing me songs and started to pick up on it. And he said, man, are you paying attention to how I'm doing this? I'm just listening and I'm trying to think of chords, bits and pieces of chords, and he would explain it out as best as possible. And then I just learned it on my own from there.
Is that where you got sort of your tone is pretty distinctive? Was that sort of from your dad telling you to pay attention to tone? And
no, he didn't ever just tell me to like totally, hey, watch your tone, son. Hey, I'll spank you. No, he just, things that he would say, I would just link up to other value. There's so many values to look at, from note value to tone value.
Did you ever work on just thinking, I want to get my own tone?
I always wanted my own tone. I always did. And I got a one that Randall Halfstack, and that's where I heard something different. I said, man, this is like a chainsaw, man. It's like too gritty. I bet I can make it my own one day. And like a year and a half later, I was using solid Randall. I got a cheap endorsement with him where I got it for like 39% off or something. And then established ourselves as a band and myself as a player. And of course, I'm endorsed full key with them now. And they like dig me and I love them. I think they're the best amps.
No, they're tube amps?
No, that's the funniest thing. Everybody thinks they're fucking tube amps. They're solid state. They made a tube amp. I had a Melmy one. I was going, oh man, if it's going to sound like the solid state but more warm, I'm going to die. And it did, but it just, some of the shit that tube amp is nasty. I mean, the solid state is a nasty fucking amp. And you just fucking squeal, feedback, and it's, for what I do, it's bad.
So you're doing tonight something where you get a super high screaming thing. You were going up here, you have a whammy. How do you get that thing?
I have Floyd Rose, of course.
That's how you're doing it.
And it's what I do. Here's the theory. I hope everybody learns it. I hope everybody tries to rip it off. This is one thing I would definitely take credit for.
Wait! Doing an interview, dude. Cut it down a little bit.
My brother's loaded again. Anyway, man, I would say this is definitely one thing that I've contributed to the millions of fucking things. Of course, it won't be no big standout deal or nothing, but it's my own deal. I take the G string, flick it with my left hand. Whenever I flick it, I dump the bar too. Usually do it from the back, but you can do it either way. You pull it back, pull the bar behind, and dump it like this, a la Steve Vai or whatever. I think I saw it on a video once. Right when I flick it, I dump it, so you don't hear it go, He goes. Jesus! I'm trying to roll a fucking setup over here, buddy. Jeez. Anyway. Sorry, man. We should have our own hookup.
All right.
I used to be the dude that got loaded all the time and fell down and people had to carry me home. My big brother's all big brother. He wanted to take care of me and shit. Now, dude. He's loaded. Anyway, flick the motherfucking G-string.
Dump it.
You don't hear it go, barrel. You hear it go, yeah. And it's so low. I mean, you don't dump it all the way where it's like flapping and shit. And right when it goes down, catch it. Just barely tap it at like on a fifth, fourth, third, second and a quarter, second and a half, second and three quarters. That's where my whole fucking setup is right there. That's, and you got to have the tone for it too, or it's not going to come out of there.
That, the real high tone on in your lead to by Demons Be Driven, is that thing?
Absolutely.
I thought it was a harmonizer or something.
Nah. I'll tell you this one thing, and I hope you print it so nobody gets the wrong idea. I just bought a whammy pedal fucking 2 weeks ago. I was at a music store and I go, what's new, dude? What's fucking weird? He broke this pedal out on me that has like all these thirds, fifths, and everything, and high octave, low octave. Have you ever seen one?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can go like, bang. I added that to what I already did, man, and I can like get the dogs coming out of the fucking background.
Right.
I mean, it goes away, dude. It's so high. I doubt I'll use that. Like, I've never used it on a record yet, I'll say that, so.
Do you work out your solos like when you're doing it?
The way I do solos is we write a song. We spend all the time writing the rhythm to the song and the structure and everything. We go, oh, now we need a lead part. Nobody's interested in the lead part. Phil is like, the day the lead guitar player is over with. Let's make the lead one measure long and let's get back into the jams, you know? And I agree to a certain extent. I mean, there's not gonna be another Edward fucking Van Halen come along to where it just sounds so good, you wish the lead would never end. And so the kind of stuff we're doing is more of a foursome effort. And so when it comes to leads and stuff, I really work on keeping them interesting and innovative to my own extent that I can do it. What I do is they go, oh, now we need lead section here, and I go, let's just go to the key of A flat, man, and we'll just jam on that for four bars, and we'll go back into the song. And usually we just do something like that to fake it for a sec, and then just to get the whole piece of music written, and then usually hardly ever changes, or we'll put a little something else in. And once we lay a basic down, I'll take that home that night, draw Morty fucking six beers down, a little buzzed. I'll go to my four-track room, I'll put it in my four-track, and there's two tracks available to play on. I play one lead, I turn it off, I switch over to track four, play another lead, and then I go back and I sit there and I listen to it. Or sometimes like a Cemetery Gates or something off Cowboys from Hell. That's the very first lead I ever played on there, and I didn't even play a second when I said, fuck it, I just turned the thing off and I went to bed knowing that I was going to listen to that tomorrow and kind of work off of that a little bit. It's mostly spontaneous.
You just sort of have this guy tape to go just to key you up there. The one you did the night before.
I just want to go home and see what comes out instead of like doing it in the studio and getting frustrated and not getting a good lead and sitting there skitzing going, oh no, wasting their time and my time because I'm not prepared.
Right. Do you play a lot of acoustic? Your arpeggios on hollow are really tight. Do you play a lot of acoustic?
I don't think of it as like I think of the electric guitar. I play it for like a different release of
just
because it sounds different and the tension on the strings is different. Like cat guts strings and shit. It's cool, man. You can like really flow on some stuff like that and brings different things out of you. I write a lot of stuff on acoustic and then play it on a fucking electric, but I don't claim to fame any acoustical values. Definitely.
You know, are you familiar with Alex Skolnick of Testament?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of people come up to him and tell him, you know, you're too good for thrash. He's like, you know, anybody starting to come up and tell that to you? Because
never.
Really?
Because I'm not. I'm just good enough for thrash. No, man, a dude like Alex Skolnick is, to me, is just, I mean, just the same as anybody like Steve Vai or anybody else that knows every scale in the book and exactly how it's going to sound before you play it. I'm not trying to blow the dude down at all, but I mean, there's no, I don't hear that dude playing from the heart. Mm-hmm. I just hear it like some dude that went to school and learned a computer and sat there and fucking patch in 20 million words per minute. You can learn that shit. It's just chops, dude. I mean, to play from the heart and really feel something and to fucking hammer something means a hell of a lot more than 20 million notes.
Where does Kirk Hammett fit into that kind of thing? Does he play with feel or is he more of a chopper?
I don't know, man. I really wish you wouldn't ask me about other guitar players. I don't know. I like some of Kirk's earlier playing.
They've sort of changed. They're taking a different direction.
Yeah.
Tell me about this Bill Lawrence pickup. Is that like central to your tone there?
It's fucking detrimental to my tone. I gotta have it, man.
Yeah. Who turned you on to it?
I turned myself on accident. I wanted to set one of my friends up for his birthday present, and this dude that worked at ICM had this huge box of pickups and shit. And I went over to his house and he said he'd give me one for a joint.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him a J and he was gonna set me up with a fucking pickup. And I go, how about that one? Because it had the little poles on it.
Yeah.
I thought it looked neat. And he goes, oh, cool. That's a nice pickup. It's a this and that. And he set me up. He mounted it in there, set me up. I went home just to plug it in and see what it did, man.
Uh-huh.
And I found myself playing for like 3.5 hours, which is kind of long for me. And just the harmonics and just the clarity of it. I mean, you could go from like, you could play like, have it totally distorted, play a full chord and hear every note.
Does it sound good through any amp or with especially the Randall?
I hadn't tried it through every amp, man. I'm not a dude that I'm getting boogies tomorrow, dude. I'm getting this amp shipped in, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be God. I got the new Seldano or whatever. Fucking shut up. You don't have your own tone. That's why you're shipping something else in and fucking with it all the time. I don't have a fucking pedal board 30 miles long. I got my piece of shit, whatever you want to call it, and it's my tone, and that's all I want, man.
So
that's all I need.
The bottom line is just getting the feeling across.
I don't have fucking chops like, I don't want chops like that. I mean, you know.
Pretty good chops. You're underestimating yourself.
Well, I got decent chops in my own way. But I mean, if you set me down with a dude like Alex Skolnick to somebody that didn't understand heart and just wanted to hear fucking 5 million notes, dude, that dude, you know, they'd go, oh, dude, he burned you, you know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he did in theory value and sitting in his room for 30 years fucking burning these scales up and down the neck. It's more intimate to me to play the guitar from the heart. It's not like something you can try to earn either, you know, either you got that or you don't.
Right. So what was it about the Deans? Why do you go with Deans? I mean, it's like an antique to a lot of people.
For one, that it's an antique to everybody else and that it's a fucking tool. It's a fucking fighting fucking, geez, what would you call it? It's my shotgun.
I got one like that. I got an Ibanez Iceman. Real old.
Oh, badass.
And I liked it for the same reason, I think. It just looks like it could hurt somebody with it.
It was the look of originally, you know, back to that 13-year-old thing, 14, just looking at something and being a kid and just going, oh, God, that's bad.
Yeah,
dude, I got a Dean catalog and I almost shit in my pants, man. Anyway, I got it for that, man, and flat fucking cold. It was the nicest guitar I'd ever played. Right out of the box, I ordered one and shit. Fucking when I got it, my dad bought it for me for my birthday or something like that. I mean, dude, he didn't have that kind of money, but dude, I was just like, Dad, look at this, dude. Listen to that. That's a Dean guitar. I wouldn't even know what it was if it sounded good. I'd just tell him that. He fucking like splurged his ass off and made like payments and paid it off. Then I won one like 2 weeks after that. And then I had two, so I was like, fuck, I've started my arsenal, Dean arsenal. And then when I put a Floyd Rose in it, actually that was something my dad did for me too on a birthday present that I didn't even ask for like 2 years later. They just came out with Whammies and they had like Floyd Rose and the Kaler, and he took a look at both of them and he made the decision that he thought the Floyd was the more durable one that happened. Anyway, he just went down just under my fucking, you know, not even knowing it at all. I came to the gig that night and I had a fucking Whammy on a Dean guitar, which is the strangest thing in the world at the time. It's like a Whammy on a Les Paul. It was never meant to be. Anyway, I ramble on for hours. I love Dean guitars. They do everything I want, and they sound fucking great for me.
Are they still around?
They petered out and tried to do that Japanese thing, I think. Sell some cheaper guitars, so make some cash. That's all I do is fucking search for old ones constantly.
What model?
ML.
ML.
It's a half Lion V and a half Explorer. It's got the big headstock.
24 frets.
It's 22 frets. Like near the end of their whole setup, they started making like 24 frets and stuff. I got one 24 fret Dean.
Do you still have the Floyds on there? Or?
Oh, they all have to have Floyds, and they have to have fucking Bill Lawrence L500Ls or L500XL. XL is a little hotter.
Did you change anything else on them?
Unless it's got like the classic tobacco burst. Yeah. You know, or sunburst fucking paint job. I take to this dude, Rick Dubstat, and paints jet skis, and I tell him put pot leaves on there and skulls or something, you know, and he goes off. That's the only thing.
What kind of Randalls are they?
They're Randall RG100 HTs. They're rack mount. I think HT means rack mount. I don't know.
You got a pedal board?
I don't. I have them in a rack, and the only thing else I use is a Furman PQ4 parametric equalizer. I just use that. I don't really use it for much more than just cutting out some frequencies that I don't want and boosting a couple that I do want. And the main thing is another vital, detrimental thing to my tone is a little blue MXR 6-band EQ, 9-volt battery. And that's it. I use a
whammy pedal.
Steve, don't even include that because I've come out and I fucking just use that thing to get like super ridiculous squeals. Just got it. I don't even know how to use it good yet.
There seems to be like a lot of like rhythmic interplay between you and the drums. Is that something you guys work on?
Rhythmic what?
Interplay. It seems like there's a lot of rhythm and playing, and it's sort of like you and the drums are playing with each other really tight. Do you guys work on that?
Do you know Vinny's my brother?
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people don't know that. Yeah. We don't look alike. Yeah. We grew up together. I've never jammed with another drummer. I never ever tried to form anything with another drummer in my life. So we grew up together. First song we ever played was Smoke on the Water. And then we were doing More Than a Feeling by Boston. And I thought I'd learned the riff right. And he goes, look, dude. He was trying to play to me. And he goes, look, man, check this out. This is one and two, and he counted the time out to me and shit, and he goes, look, man, you're missing like two notes right there. If you can try to figure that out, we listen to the record, and he goes, right there, you know? So he like helped me to get the time. After that, everything was like fine with time. We just grew from there, and we've always played together. Me and him are like attached. I mean,
telepathy kind of thing?
It's easy. It's very easy.
It's not complicated.
No, I gotta drive.
You gotta drive? Are you getting hammered?
No, I gotta go home.
Okay. I have to have another beer before I can go home.
I'm gonna go home and I have to get home. Tell me about the Moscow gig.
Amazing.
How did you get on it?
The guy that signed us, the A&R guy that had all the belief in us in the first place, he moved on from Atco. Was doing something else, and he got hooked up with Warner, and he was one of the main dudes that threw the whole Monsters of Rock concert there in Moscow. His name's Mark Ross. He's been very good to us all along, and they needed one more band to fill the shoes. This dude that was a promoter over there in Russia had saw us in Europe somewhere, and he really enjoyed the show and shit, and he goes, what about this band Pantera? Because they said they wanted somebody that would be real honest and could do the fans some justice and stuff. And Mark just died. He goes, fuck, dude, I signed those motherfuckers. Let me give him a call. Yeah, I want to do it. The funnier part about that was during the Cowboys from Hell record, we took a bunch of breaks to go play like gigs and keep doing everything and keep it all going instead of concentrating on the record. It kind of broke us from getting like the most concentration out of it. So we said, we're never doing that again. And then on the next record, we get this call right in the fucking middle of it. We get offered to go to Moscow, play with Metallica, AC/DC. And we just go, God, I can't believe we got to do it. We got to do it. So we took a break and went over.
Russian metal fans, different than U.S. metal fans? Or?
They don't understand our language or what the singer's singing, but they can hear the fucking conviction in Phillip's voice, and the music is the universal thing that moves anybody. You can't, fuck, you can't even talk. You can listen to music and,
they reacted to your set.
Fuck. You're going to die when you see this fucking movie they're putting out on it.
Oh, really?
Documentary. It's, I've already got our segment of it. And it's, dude, they chopped a couple of like leads in half and stuff, but the crowd was, dude, it was insane. It was insane. I mean, I'd never played in front of that many people in my life, and probably never will again.
Did you hang with the other guys on the bill, like Metallica?
I saw him for a couple. I know James and Lars from like 5 years back or so. We stayed up and jammed like two nights solid in my garage.
So are all your live shows pretty wild? They get pretty crazy.
Dude, every our music's a fucking wild music. You want to call it
that? Where does that come from? I mean, is that just Phillip's lyrics driving?
No. You know? I mean,
you guys just don't like that.
Guys, shit, his lyrics. You know, we got to accommodate each other. If you're catching the vibe off of me, people look at others from Texas and stuff, and they go, oh, you're all egoed out, or you're all, I'm proud of what I do, and I'm happy about it. And I don't want to be all fucking low-key and skidded out and not ever, I go off on shit, dude, and I'm a fucking, I go off on my music, fucking rage on it. I like to fucking rip, dude, period. Anything I do, anytime, unless I'm sick as piss, man, I like to fucking just go with it.
You ever got hurt at a gig?
Oh, yeah, several times. Got knocked out. Got fucking almost knocked myself out trying to do a ridiculous stage dive with the guitar into a crowd with like 50 people at the end of a night at a club about 2.5-3 years ago. Anyway, sure, man, I just fucking rage on it. Fucking sprained ankle big time. I'm pretty much not into the stage. I'd still do it. I say I don't do it, I'd go do one. You know, I still do it. I just don't do it while I'm playing, man, because everybody sees that guitar coming, that fucking pointed headstock. Say ya, they're out of there, and I fucking smash the concrete.
Do you guys all get together when you write, or do you just...
Big time. I would say me and Vinny are like the main... Well, we're just one chunk, man, just put it that way. Rex is just one chunk with us too, man. I mean, the riffs are coming from me, and Vinny's accommodating me with the fucking Latin rhythms or whatever it takes to fucking hang with it. And Rex, man, he really fucking, in a cool way, knows what he thinks is his place as a bass player. I mean, he doesn't try to do all these double hammer-ons and shit like that. And he's just, I mean, I can respect him more for the way he is, being solid and fucking just kick ass. He jams with Vinny like I jam with Vinny. They've been together for about as long as we have too. I mean,
you all just come up with ideas when you're standing around and
Phil sits in the control room and he'll go, oh man, that part's great, do it two times, let's see how it sounds, or that part didn't fit. Phil's a brilliant listener, and so he coaches us. I got the riffs. Vinny and Rex are the backbone, and we just fucking hammer them out. We wrote Vulgar Display of Power in 2 weeks.
Really?
I'm proud of that.
Wow.
We wrote it in 2 weeks.
That's fantastic. Let me ask you.
It's all right.
One
could
more
be
thing. Better. Are you going to have any ideas for your next album?
No, I ran out.
Yeah. You guys writing on the road, or are you going to just wait?
I don't know how anybody else writes, but I can't sit down and just decide to write. It comes out spur of the moment, and that's how it's going to be. I mean, you know, I'll play something and somebody will go, God damn, what was that? Or something, it does something. Then I'll get like video camera out and film it, or anything that's handy.
Yeah.
Or just anytime, anywhere, man.
And finally, what would you say, like, five essential guitar albums every guy, a young guy should have in their collection?
Five essential guitar albums? I'd have to base that on either whether you were talking like, not to break your question up into two, but
band-oriented guitar albums, or just like Steve Vai, like solo guitar albums?
Whatever you would think of.
I'm into band-oriented shit. Right, I'm all for that. One. Ah, fuck, man. Van Halen 1, Van Halen 2, easily. Blizzard of Oz, On Through the Night by Def Leppard is a huge influence on me.
Really? Why?
Just because those dudes were young too, and they were tearing it up. I think that was the best record they ever did. For a third one, jeez, I know I'm gonna fuck it up. Oh, God. Oh, dude, what a hole. How about
just anybody? To be metal.
Are you in a hurry? No, you. I would say Kiss double platinum, just because it's got like a well-rounded scan of a bunch of the Kiss records that I really love the guitar playing on. That was my original.
Big for you?
That was my original reason to ever want to play guitar. Yeah. Ace Frehley.
You and a million other guys.
All the guys in Skid Row too.
Yeah, me too.
You too?
Yeah. 76. Saw him on this Paul Lynn. Remember Paul Lynn? He used to be on Hollywood Squares. He was this comedian.
Oh, yeah, right.
He had this Halloween special in 76.
I saw that, man.
I had Kiss on it.
Right. Like flames and everything, dude.
Yep, that's the another play. That was it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tapes Archive podcast. Please remember, you can always find more information about the show and the individual episodes at our website, thetapesarchive.com. Until next time, the vault is closed.